This is part five of our chapter 23, part five deals with the cognitive aspects of content, and then we see is this is manifested and this is family planning services, chapter social worker, and Pastor Arthur Bolt from Dr. Lucy Cook and Dr. Bionaster. Our underlying thought for this segment is that what people think makes a difference. This is, I believe, a more familiar area. Much of our experience in social interaction has to do with dealing with cognitive aspects, knowing and informational kinds of material. So we're dealing with a more familiar area. An important dimension of the cognitive part of content is value. Now, can you lead us into that thought a little more? What sort of expectations, value-wise, do you find people bringing to conflict situations with you?
I think that, first of all, I would characterize it as a perfectionist idea. If I can give you an example, in marriage, for example, that they see this is the way the situation has to be. This is the way I see about my situation with my husband and the way this marriage has to go. And then everything is directed from that point of view. And so you can't really get out to be free as you ought to. We're not even going to talk about a breakup of the marriage here. Because that's just out of the question. And I think it's that type of preset value that's going to set up all kinds of walls that keep you from getting out in your situation or any possibility of working towards a solution. No, I can't do this. I've got these things set up beforehand. So that I guess I would say that we have a number of things sitting in the box. And all you do is pull out the box and go it in. And life isn't like that, and the solutions aren't like that, and Christianity isn't like that either.
Do you find a difference between the value system you yourself would want to maintain in a company relationship and the value system people kind of expect you to maintain?
Yes, I think that that's very definitely true. And you're thinking of the kinds of things that they would expect me to set as a pastor and the kinds of values then that I would play back to them. I would feel it very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sometimes would have to say, well, I think there's some other things here that you ought to do, that you have to consider that may not fit with what they think about my sense of values.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose this relates to the many different roles that a pastor plays in a congregation. There is a place in the congregation for being a judge, I guess, or for being an evaluator, for saying it's better to do A than B. And so people come into a conference situation and they're expected to say the same thing and to think the same way. It's better to do A than B, and you should do you said. And as you said, the conference situation isn't like that. We can't give people the answer for themselves.
I can think of a situation where the person is attempting in one way or another to get a right or wrong answer. And my reaction to that would be you start with the wrong form. The right and the wrong is not the issue. Now, I can also see that person saying or thinking, I know this is kind of a trick, that the pastor is no longer interested in right and wrong, and that's not the point. The point is that starting at that or hanging on, thinking the right and wrong is not the case, so you're going to really get out there. Some of the problems. But people really get hung up there and won't never get around it.
because the thing is, that's not the place to start.
Okay.
It's the place where you want to go, hopefully, but you want to have the person himself say, this is right for me to do, or this is wrong for me to do. You want him to start up, having gone through a whole process of evaluating and looking at his behavior. Really, a counselor can't be the one to set up for them, and we can't start if we can. Can you give an example to kind of clarify what we've been saying about expectations and values?
I think the place where it gets difficult for a Catholic usually to evaluate what is that Catholic coming in there. And people assume that the Catholic value system has a degree of marriage and a very, very high place.
And a lot of the bad situations happen where they really need to
In this life, candidate. So what kind of options do you have? Maybe we've got two or three, maybe we have less than that. And if you've got some options, okay, you can choose them.
Well, the problem may be not considering and not options. If the only one or two are actually in your mind. So you say how the conversation would be to push for more if you think they're on there. Maybe even suggest them. Suggest additional options.
I would like to
ask. Okay. A question that I find terribly useful, what kind of condition is that? Especially when you're dealing with only one actor in a situation that has many actors. If you are dealing with the wife, and she's talking about her husband most of the time, but I only ask you this question. The possibility of including those people in the conference session is real or near real. Talking about other people can be heard for a long, long time. Sometimes she has you can stop her and say, you know, this is your conference session, and you are not going to change those people out there, and you know, I don't even hear. But what can you do differently, mother, about your relationship with the husband or whoever the person that is running the position?
I think that's really important. I've been thinking of an example where that the mother did different in nursing community. Wasn't even that she did in the sense of changing the behavior, something differently. But that question, what can you do differently, stimulated her to think about how she was feeling. And she was able to say in the next couple of weeks, what I'm doing differently is admitting that I dislike my child sometimes. But all the while I've been telling him I love him so much and love him so much, I've really been disliking him and almost hating him for his behavior because he hurt me. And the minute I admitted that my feeling was not what I thought was, things changed. And it was amazing thing to change because the children had not known anything differently. But the mother had been able to change her feelings about the situation and about herself.
I've thought about this before, but it seems to me to be a really helpful instrument there. What can you do differently? It's a very powerful way of helping the person to see that, particularly if there are more people involved, that person's kind of problem. If it's a marriage relationship, we can very easily say, in the case of two people, you know, we're both involved. The chances are that in many cases the individual is saying it's really, you know, my husband or my wife, if they change, it's going to be all right, because I've got things that are concerned. But that question, what can you do differently, really puts this into the picture.
And I guess, you know, it's also a valuing question. It should be a value that you can be ready to do something different. Some of them if you've been doing that. The motivation, the moral integrity, and all sorts of different things to want to change the situation. Okay, I think another important contribution of the counselor is a rallying focus. And I've been talking about the question that came to this one. It's really a rally question. What's going on? There's really what's going on now about a husband. It's not really reality, is it? There is a second reality of very bad, meaning her contribution. And I think this is a one thing that the counselor has to add to the situation. Part of what makes her difficult is that he's the first party. He's the second party. He's not involved in the rest of the inner life as the counselor is. He has a part of detachment and can bring to bear perhaps a different point of view on the whole matter.
I think sometimes it's not so much a different point of view as it is that we are able to ask different questions than the people have been asking themselves. Sometimes, and this is kind of a far-fetched analogy, I think of the process of helping a person look at a situation, it's as if there were a big dollhouse, one of the times where the roof comes off and you can see all the rooms, you know. And the person standing over can look at what's going on between the people in those rooms. And the counselor is kind of like that. He stands, you know, above and beyond and outside. And he can ask the question that in effect I say, do we know what's going on in the living room while you're standing in the kitchen? You need to know so. You can ask the questions that people have been on either or in a real edge as things themselves.
Yeah, that's what I would call a living question. You are asking a question that opens up a whole new area of possible conversation and inspiration, for example, relationship.
So this also cuts the whole value, the place of value, which we all can take it. It's important for the culture to get a reality focus so that if you have a child, a particular situation where something is causing behavior of a problem, the reality focus is you're going to have to get at the cause. You're going to have to get at the source. Another way, for example, the same thing constantly, but you know, I have to be a faithful mother. I have to take care of my children. And I realize they've been taking care of their children until this lady gets off of that faithful mothership and takes care of herself and goes off and treats that type of thing. So the value system gets in the way when they say, I've got to be a faithful mother. Mm-hmm. And the reality system says, you're not going to be a faithful mother no matter how you do it, unless you get out. Yes.
And I think this is where you can ask some reality questions like, do you really believe that? Or is it mama-in-law who's telling you that you ought to stay home all day every day with the children? You know, what do you really think deep down inside? And oftentimes people think they adhere to values that really aren't their values. They belong to parents, or they belong to the school teacher, or they may belong to the pastor, or the person thinks they belong to the pastor.
They belong to the pastor, and can bring them to go back home.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. There are any questions, reading questions, and I have another category of questions. I'm called stupid questions. I think that's the kind of good time for questions of time. By that I mean, mainly just rephrasing or asking a terribly simple-minded question that so likely the person hasn't thought through. For example, mother would say of her 15-year-old, I don't need to tell me what's wrong with my kid, but when something's wrong with my kid, it seems lazy. That's why I was just a lazy kid. The counselor might say, mother, I'm really not facing you when you say lazy. And force her to open that box a little bit and have a look at it and see how much of it is visible, how much of it is everyday relationship, and what you do, and what you do there, or whatever. And people use loaded words like that, and maybe that's a clue that there's a concept, categorizing a person that needs further investigation.
Another example would be a statement like, my husband never does anything for me. And he says, never? And that is an opening kind of statement. Person opening, the story of it.
mobile hallway, it depends what, if you're working in non-certain kinds of people, they would say, good for nothing, to describe a person, right? And that would again be something that you might want to look at a little more closely. However, as the council listens, we need to get a picture of the covered area in someone's life. An important contribution we can make is to find out significant emotions in the council thinking about the matter. For example, a lady who was telling me a problem with one of the children.
The final segment of the Catholic
conference trip. Seven, six deals with ending conflict. Let's start by talking about ending each session. Do you do something special when you conclude a session? How do you do that?
Well, I try to summarize with the person what we talked about. This may be a very short summary, and I'm doing it for the purpose of checking back with the person that I picked up what he wants to tell me. So I may say, for instance, I have picked up these two important things. If this is the thing, do you consider them important? And if the person does, we build on that for the next person.
We were trying to keep that time.
Right.
Which is what we did today.
It's very important because I need to get from my own mind what I can do in session two. And I think it also gives the person a sense of reassurance in the sense that, yes, something can be done about whatever problem I'm dealing with. What can be done might not be how could be done. But at least we have something to work with.
I can see the purpose of this, and I think because I feel that this is one of the weakest points, and I think in my pastor, I think I must discuss it. I think it's an important situation. As I recall, I can recall situations where I didn't even make a set of definite calls. I would sort of leave it up to the individual, and I can see the best person in there. To say, well, you know, what you want to do is a legal testimony. I think the evaluation and summary, and then some kind of situation in the world that they're supposed to come in and read both of us. That's one sort of key thing.
It's also a way of signaling the end of the act. It's sometimes it's a bit difficult to do. People are really lined up in the end.
I think it's not a bit difficult. I think it's one of the most difficult things we have to do. Because I think we as counselors need to learn that there's a legitimate use of authority and position, and our role as a counselor, we have to help people in the hour. And I say that with some feeling because it took me about 18 months to get to the point where I could stand up in the hallway over and interrupt with the hard to something that I thought was very important to hear. I would interrupt it and say, we will have time to continue this next week. You're always here for you next week, but we do have to stop now. That's very hard to do, especially if you have people who want to stay in that, but who want to begin a social conversation.
This can be an initiative to conduct this thing on multiple times. People will bring up more interesting things if they allow. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes, I think this is something to be very aware of. It's often that they will, that it's the most interesting things to the left. And it's a way of saying, are you caring enough about me to listen to me? And of course, this is where reality enters in because often we don't have another hour of time with me.
Another part of the question at times, can we be neutralized? You know, I'm, the kind of thing, comfortable to say, and I have been successful at neutralizing people at other times, and I'm going to find out if I can neutralize you.
If I can put you in the last scene of things.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the task here? As I look at the system, really an important test because pastors give you a question sometimes. If you can spell out any time if they were 26 hours here, you don't be there, and then you can only do it. Or if the pastor says your hour is back, and you ask me, that your time or that is my time. I think probably it's the kind of role that the pastor plays in any city allows the people to have any time. It's not true because they have an afternoon if they want. And yet, it's a very easy time to say, again, maybe they're innocent. So the also feels that I'm here to serve these people and so it's a call at 2 o'clock in the morning. Maybe you have to go, maybe you have not. And I say, well, it's great to see you, I just go to them. He's got a way of living it.
I think the thing to evaluate is, helpful? For the person who's doing the mission of prayer or who is helping you, it's more helpful to give in and spend more time with them. Because in effect, you're saying to them, you're more powerful than I am. You're the one who controls the situation. You're the one who calls the help. And if you have that person needing help, so then just calling up in the system, you can't be able to help to them. So you can continually fighting the control guard.
Mm-hmm. Over time. If you allow yourself a conflict to be drawn in too much into that person's doing things, you can how about at the end of a counseling course, if you have a therapy contract for, let's say, 10 sessions, and this is now session 10. Session 10, if this is, has been agreed upon as a evaluation time, would you spend the entire hour then in evaluation? What's your question on that?
Well, I think I'm going to back up just a minute and say that I would start talking about the contact ending well before the 10th session. It would pick it up at about the 7th session, and I would say at the beginning of the hour, this is our 7th session, 10. We have 3 more weeks in which to work. And I would do that because it's an impetus to work harder, because people know that they're going to end, and if you make it very clear that they can't or won't be going on during the 10 weeks, often we are finding people really getting down to business in those last 3 weeks.
But that's why it's the interesting story.
Rather than end it. Okay, then if we go to the last hour itself, I did spend much of that hour in looking back over what has happened. And comparing what the feelings and the behavior 10 weeks ago was with what it is now. How differently are people functioning? Or how much better are they feeling? Those two things are important to talk about.
And what do you do if they're not functioning better? They're not feeling better. If the feelings are maybe worse.
That's a sticky question. And a call for some real fine evaluation. There are many people who, because of their need to be close to somebody, or their need to have a father figure or an authority person around, they resent you when you start talking about the contract. I've heard this happen many times. It happens often with women who are kind of hysterical and dramatic. The depression that they came in with gets intensified 2 weeks before you end. The physical symptoms that they've had get worse than they've ever been. Literally, worse headaches, a paralysis in the arms, for instance. Family difficulties, you'll find someone telling you and saying, well, I can't stop now because everything's just going to cut. And if you've made a realization that this is a resistance to stopping conflict, you have to say that. Again, in an accepting, tactful, warm kind of way, but you have to say, there's often happens when we end a contract, things get worse. But they will get better, and we have functioned better in the last 6 weeks. And it won't be very long before you find yourself behaving better and feeling better on your own. That is Stan Fleming, not extend the contract.
This is sometimes talk about, say you have a contract for 10 seconds. The really valuable thing is the question is, remind people about the contract, and that's a good idea. What we do by doing that kind of thing, and by sticking to the contract for the hour, and sticking to the contract for the having a session with the announcer, is that we call it sectioning, and the point of it is partly to help the person learn his own dependency agreements that are generated by a constant relationship. People can, if allowed to, get totally dependent on a contract.
Well, that's built into the constant relationship, you know, we're all vulnerable to that, because there are such few places in our society where you can go to talk to somebody who will listen to you, who will accept what you say without judging or, you know, making faces or calling it stupid or silly or something. There aren't any places like that to go to unless you've got a really good marriage. And so we're all vulnerable to being dependent in a constant relationship, whether we've had tremendously good problems or not.
It might work in another way. That is whether it's a kind of compliment. To have somebody come and say that dependency on the attacker factor, for example, could be a very dangerous thing, because it might still be the protection of it. It's a great thing. Here's a person that I'm helping, they need you, and I like to be needed because I think, particularly in the day, sometimes you don't like to feel so needed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel needed, you make the most of it. And it's probably something that really needs to be that. So I think there's a real good thought of a factor.
Partly because he's not something else that both of us are able to spend a sizable portion of each day seeing people an hour at a time. And the fact is counseling loads might amount to one person right now, and that's all the counseling I'm doing. And it might be two or three. But that gets to be a pretty good sized task of counseling there, two or three. By what I know about this business, there's some kind of protection in having a lot of clients, a lot of counselors. Sometimes you can feel something about yourself as a counselor, whereas the pastor has just kind of getting a hold of it with one.
It also makes it easier to structure all the way to the topic. So while you're studying at how to end the hour, it's very easy to say, well, I can't see you any longer, I have a client waiting for me another time. And that is a pop-up, because that's not why you're ending the hour. You're ending the hour because it's not good for the person to be able to be on the hour with you. Back to your point about the task of needing to be needed, or the social work of needing to be needed, I think we have to recognize that perfectly legitimate human emotions, the students, you know, try to cut those emotions out of ourselves and be all detached and uncaring. But it's what we do to handle those emotions that's important.
Is it? Yes. So we talked about ending each session, and we talked about ending the counseling, the course of counseling, and we talked a bit about dependency. I think there is another thing or other like that happens sometimes. Maybe it's part of the dependency that can get out of hand in a constant relationship. That would be a distorted view that the counselor might have of his counselor. This is where we say something about these distortions or view of experience.
Well, there's one distortion that happens a lot. I see a lot of women in the counseling day, and it's very easy for many women to see me as a good mother type who will always be there to answer the phone and spend lots of time on the phone, and who will be the real giver. And of course, that plays right into my own thinking that I like doing it. So you get caught up in that. But it's important for a counselor to realize that that a person who comes to see him, who has a problem, will drag along with him attitudes and feelings that are more appropriately placed on other people out in the environment.
And maybe in non-Christians.
In non-Christians, brothers and sisters, teachers. For instance, the person who comes in and seems to be almost irrationally angry at the concept. And as far as the master can't think of anything that you really did that would have kicked off that anger. And I think you have to evaluate that, that you know, maybe you did do something. But given the fact that we find that you can assume that there's an irrational kind of attitude that the person is carrying a feeling around that might better be placed on his parents or something.
I think this kind of reflection happens to the fact that in and out of the counseling relationship. In some ways, the doctor sets himself up for his grandma sets himself up for some person in a cold father. You know? And that's just a different kind of emotion, depending on what kind of relationship you have with your child. The irrational anger can be a part of what people think, or what gets generated by seeing very, very minor kinds of real occurrences in a counseling relationship. People can be terribly sensitive to rejection, and the need with me 2 minutes late.
Or as the fact that you don't like them.
Terrible rejection. It touches them, and then they get angry about it, and you're wondering what hits you.
I would do that better than that, you know, lighting cigarettes for people, helping a woman turn around with a coat. That's so much a special kind of gesture that so much more can be read into.
Mm-hmm. It's an important thing that in a pastor conference situation, the relationship is going to go up. The relationship in the time of is going to go up. And I think this needs to be remembered from the person comes in and possibly as a relationship there, I said some things that later on they thought about and really wanted whether they could have said them. This could be a problem. Or if they have to be a kind of normal relationship or normal routine, and I think that needs to be ready to by the pastor, so that they can make it.
In fact, the pastor in this final session has a task to do. Namely, to restore the original pastor relationship because he's going to continue to be the person who is in the person who has been in the pastor. So, this is just informing you do the final evaluation and you say, well, you have made the progress and trust that you've got enough and you've got to get sick. At the special location, please, you say, guys, people, the pastor is. So he maybe needs to even talk about it again and say to a confident word like, we have come close together for this period of 2 weeks, and we have shared in an intimate way and ordinary happy for us, but I'm going to be stopping away from you again now. Because the counseling relationship has done what it is supposed to. And I'm going to go back to the counselor. And that means that we will be better. And there's many things that you told me. I will probably forget now. But the very name of something different about it. The difference that is very original. One other thing about discussing that people, and I think it's a very helpful thing to do, this discussion seems to really threaten the content process in content relationship, is to thwart it a bit by adding the reality information about this job. What is that coming from me? If someone is beginning to if at that point you can talk about the day-to-day things that happen in your life, the stuff that you have in your life, if anything to pull you down off that godlike pedestal that people want to put you
on. Anything to let them see that you're human too.
How about your frustration with your child? That could be very comfortable. That means you can have a place in terms of reorienting on your kind of reality view and bringing some values to the clarity of the conversation together.
But if you worthwhile and take that trip to say, if this is a problem for you, it's not a problem for you, if somebody is similar in ending,
to be
not really help to have a friend again.
We first got together, I remember saying, trying to express your feelings, saying that you felt stuck at the time, and it struck me like nowhere to go in your box. I hear you saying now that you're things in life and it's not really confining.
I think so. Yeah, I think I really feel that way. It's starting to happen again. Learning how to do something to get out of it, but I guess.
You really feel that things can be better.
I'm a lot more hopeful now than I was 8 years ago.
What's the situation with the kids?
Yeah, they're still not really bad. The kids.
Yeah,
I think that's better too, because I'm happy. Because I feel like I'm happier as well.
You feel before you seem to feel this kind of constant pain, and now it's more likely what happens in every home, huh?
I think maybe it is. Greg is not having all the problems with school he's having, and with the fights and other things. And he's not doing a great school working a little bit, but he seems to be getting on better with the other kids. He's still just kind of sick even home, but